I'll ask anybody's question but yours, if you're an idiot.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
All right, another week of the Made for March podcast on the Underdogs Podcast Network. Tim Leonard, Tyler Rocky, catching you up on all things college hoops. And I guess there really hasn't been a lot of college hoops lately, Ty. I've been missing it.
Yeah, No one plays anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but you get it. It's getting to the point now, though, where, like, what's the point of Mark Emmert's job? Is he just the world's biggest party planner at this point? Because that's what he does. He plans the Final Four and some of these other big events, but it feels like the NCAA doesn't do a whole heck of a lot when you've got a global pandemic going on. You've got all these different kids who have no idea if they're going to be playing tomorrow. Are they going to be playing next week? Are they going to be playing in 2 weeks? You see all these other leagues sort of coming out with new protocols, and it's the NCAA just kind of sitting there on their hands, and their move's going to be the last move on the chessboard.
Yeah, it's almost like Mark Emmert's approval rating is lower than Roger Goodell's all of a sudden. Like, that was kind of the one
I don't even
you
think that's
touch.
I don't think that's a debate anymore. Like, it seriously is.
And for a while, Roger Goodell was untouchable, right? Like, he was the most hated sports czar, sports commissioner, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, Mark Emmert's done nothing, and I get it. This was sort of, you know, blindsided all of us. I don't think anyone thought that we were going to run into this deja vu, and maybe games are going to be postponed here or there, but if you were to told me at the start of the year an over under on the number of games getting postponed, I probably would have, you know,
been, the over would have cashed.
Yeah, it would have been like 5 or 10 or something. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, it shattered all expectations of that, and it's been very sudden. And these last 2 weeks, I'm sure for a lot of people listening, have felt like 3 years at times, and not having college hoops has been tough. But anyway, on the show today, we will look into kind of where things stand and some other news and notes that have come out in the past couple weeks. There have been some decent games. There was a good slate of games last night as of us talking here on Thursday, a couple SEC games and a good Big East game last night. We'll do our mid-season, or I guess kind of quarter of the season, All-American teams, because I think that's
I guess it's sort of preseason, pre-conference, we'll call it.
Pre-conference, yeah, there we go. So the non-conference slash pre-conference play, All-American teams, which I think is fascinating. I started to sit down and do it, and there's a lot of names in the conversation. It is kind of tough to whittle it down, so we'll go through our teams for those. We'll also check out on some bets for you guys on BovadaSportsbook.com, because we're always keeping an eye on how you can make some money, what is some futures that we like in that regard. We'll do some one and dones where we just hit on quickly some other topics that have been on our mind in college basketball. But let's start with the All-American teams, I guess. That's kind of the fun thing. You want to just jump into that?
Let's do it.
All right, so who did you have, like, who was the first name you wrote down? I'm curious, because it might not be the National Player of the Year front runner, but
yeah,
this was a tough exercise for me. And I think what I learned is, there are a lot of really good forwards and even centers, and it was tougher for me to get to the guards. And I even sort of hypothetically did a second team in my head, and I don't know who I would put as the guards in the second team. So I don't know about you, but who was the first name you wrote down?
I had the same thought process right here, and I'm glad you asked it the way that you did. Like, the guy that first came to mind when I thought of All-Americans was not the guy who I would necessarily slot in as the player of the year right now, but Oscar Tshiebwe was the easiest one for me to put on this All-American team.
So he is not on my first team. And really? I struggle with it. Like, he was just one of those players that I mean, look, he's been unbelievable. I think he's second in the KenPom player of the year metrics. I just felt like there were a couple other guys. Basically, I gave the center spot to Drew Timmy. And then from there, it was tougher to find a spot for Tshiebwe. But the first name I think I wrote down, or the first name that came to mind for me, was E.J. Liddell. I just was like, okay, there's no way that he's not going to be on my team. So I'm going to slot him in right now. The way he's playing, it's too good. You could make a case that Tshiebwe probably should have been close to Liddell, though. Like, it's not a huge gap between those two guys, so I see why you have Tshiebwe and why he came to mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have E.J. Liddell on my team as well. I mean, he's been fantastic. He's been patrolling for the Buckeyes. He's been a big part of some big wins for them as well this year, so you can't discount any of that. I just look at Oscar Tshiebwe as, I mean, this guy's as dominant as they come right now in the sport, and from especially on a rebounding standpoint. And when you think of traditional big men, you think of rebounding prowess. And I just look at what he's doing at Kentucky. I think it's the match made in heaven. And I think another guy who is not going to be on the All-American team right now because of the time that he's missed, but Kofi Coburn, remember the rumors with him of him potentially going to Kentucky? This is exactly what Kofi would have been doing had he been at Kentucky. And he's doing it at Illinois, but he just doesn't have the sample size that some of these other guys do because he had to miss a handful of games because of some violations.
Yeah, Kofi's stats are off the charts so far. I just couldn't quite get there because of all the reasons you brought up. Missing some time to put him on the first team. I think he's in the conversation definitely down the road to get there, though. On Tshiebwe, it has been really cool to see how much the Kentucky fan base, just the student section, I believe, holding signs saying rebound counter for Oscar Tshiebwe. Yeah. And then he gets that 28 rebound game, which I guess we haven't had a chance to talk about. That was that Western Kentucky game, which was a cool thing they did benefiting the Tornado Relief Fund after they lost the Louisville game on the schedule, sort of an impromptu game there. Western Kentucky had 27 rebounds as a team. Tshiebwe had 28. I believe I saw it was first time in SEC history, I think, or at least in 40 or 50 years, that one player in the SEC has out-rebounded an entire team. I mean, that's unheard of. When I saw that 28 number, I almost just laughed out loud.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you even had to cherry pick to the extent that you did in saying it's an SEC player. Like,
right.
I can't even think of another player in the last 40 or 50 years that maybe could have done that. And I guess maybe what, you probably have to go back to like a Wilt Chamberlain or something like that, where you start thinking of names, okay, who could have possibly have done that, where you out-rebound an entire team with just one player? But, I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment. I think he's been uber-dominant, and that's why he's on my team. So I also have Liddell, who's another, and you have Timmy.
Yeah.
So another name on my list here, I'll go with another big man. I've got Travion Williams. And
okay.
I think you have to look at this from a multidimensional lens when you look at Travion Williams. Been coming off the bench. He's been the consummate teammate this entire time. He plays on one of the best teams in the entire country, and he is a big reason why they are as good as they are, and he can beat you in so many different ways. He can beat you with his offense, he can rebound the basketball, and he can facilitate. And there aren't many players that have the skill set that Travion Williams has in the country right now, and he's doing it at a dominant level with a high character sort of mentality through it all, and he's doing it on one of the best teams. So I can't dismiss what Travion Williams has done this year.
I totally agree with everything you said. Again, don't have him on my team. And the reason why is because I put Jaden Ivey at the guard spot. Mm-hmm. And I felt like guards, as we've touched on a little bit, were a little more, like, there wasn't as many guard options. So then I was like, okay, I'll put Ivey here. And I just didn't feel quite right about putting two Purdue players on.
I thought about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about that too. But I have Ivey on my team as well.
Okay.
And I just think what he does defensively, too, on the perimeter, like, there are a few that are defending at the rate that Jaden Ivey is right now. And when he turns it on, there aren't many better players in America than him.
Yeah. So I think Ivey is in Williams. They're probably not really in the conversation for player of the year because of the fact that they're both on the same team and they kind of can't. And then there's also Zach Edey, who,
right,
you could make an argument, should be on an All-America team.
They'll have
the
three All-Americans for sure.
Yeah, I would say right now that's, I mean, the over-under would be,
which is crazy because two play,
right,
the same position. Right, yeah.
It's tough because, so the reason why I sort of left off Williams is because there is a plethora of forwards and centers to choose from. And then also, he's only playing 20 minutes a game, which I know you could also say, well, that's him taking a step back and that's because his team's really good and he still is the quote-unquote leader of the team, even though he has come off the bench for a good chunk of the game so far. 13 points, 9 rebounds in 20 minutes. That's, or 20.7, so I guess if you want to round up, 21 minutes. That is a really solid per 40, whatever. Like, he's getting it done. Those stats are not bad, and he's not getting as many minutes as the rest of the options here on the All-America teams.
I will say this, though. With the Purdue guys, I'd expect those minutes to start going up, because remember how the season started with them? I mean, they were killing everybody. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And they still have had a bunch of blowout wins against some much inferior competition to the point where you're not going to see those minutes be as high just because of the nature of how the games work. And Matt Painter's not going to leave those guys out there for that long. But I'm really excited once these games really start to matter for Purdue. and you see a Jaden Ivey, and I'm not saying he's checked out in certain games, but I'm really excited to see a guy who's just locked in 40 minutes because he's going to have to play in the neighborhood of 35 or so, 37 minutes per night. That's the thing that I'm really looking forward to with Ivey once we hit the Big Ten play.
So is Ochai Agbaji your last guy?
He is, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. So he's on my team too.
He was probably the second easiest guy to slot on a team.
Right. And that's, again, like, who else is in the conversation at guard right now? I was thinking Johnny Juzang, maybe, but I don't really think, I mean, even you could make a case Juzang is not the best player on his team. I think Jaime Jaquez some games is a little bit better, maybe a little bit more consistent. Juzang's had a decent year for, like, high lofty standards. He's scoring, I think, 16 points per game when I checked it out earlier today. So he's in the conversation still, but, like, if we made a second team, I don't know who I would put at guard. I guess Johnny Juzang, maybe like a Colin Gillespie just based on pedigree, but Villanova hasn't played that great, and it's not like his numbers are jaw-dropping.
Here's a guy, I don't know if you consider him a guard per se. He's sort of a bigger guard, but Ben Mathurin
from Arizona's. That was another guy. Certainly one of those names,
yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I guess if you wanted to get cute, kind of, you could put him in as a guard. And even Keegan Murray, you could maybe wiggle in as a guard if you wanted to out of Iowa. He's leading the country in scoring right now, and I think he's up there in the KenPom Player of the Year race. So it's sort of hard to not at least consider him when you look at his numbers. Iowa probably needs to finish the year as a top echelon Big Ten team for him to stay up there, I would say. But, I mean, there's a lot of good players in the Big Ten that fall into that cat. Like, Trace Jackson Davis, if Indiana plays
just kind of
better,
tweeners. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden
And you
there.
Could say the same, though, about EJ Liddell. Like,
right.
Ohio State isn't in the same echelon as some of those. I guess Oscar Tshiebwe and Kentucky really aren't either. But they're not in that Gonzaga, Purdue, Kansas tier right now. Like, there's a clear order. And you want to know the crazy part is of all this? We went through an All-American list, and we didn't mention a single player on the best team in the country right now in Baylor. And I'd imagine that's going to change. I just think you're going to see a couple of these guys maybe start to put up some different numbers, and especially once they start doing it against teams in the Big 12, too. But, like, I don't feel the need right now to put a James Akinjo on the list for best.
No, I mean, he's averaging, like 13 points. It's just not...
Right.
And I know stats aren't
listen,
everything.
Scoring isn't everything. Yeah. Scoring's not everything. But, like, an Adam Flagler, like, they're not playing All-American-level ball, but it just goes to show the Baylor culture, the Bear culture right now, is the best in the country. And it's not even close because of what they're doing with a bunch of guys who, I mean, they're just playing fantastic team basketball. And that's why this thing works. It's why it worked last year. And I know they had some more star power last year, but the fact that, like, this is a much more impressive coaching job, I think, for Scott Drew.
Yeah. So Akinjo's number is 12.8 points, 6.3 assists. That's really solid. He is averaging 3.1 turnovers, 41% from the floor, 81% foul line, 36% from three. He's the third leading scorer, if you want to get particular, because there's LJ Cryer, Kendall Brown, that are also averaging just a tick above him at 13 points per game. LJ Cryer's 13.6 to lead the team. I would say Akinjo has a decent shot. Like, if Bavada was making odds, I think he would have a favorite or a minus in front of him to make a All-American team. And I don't really know if there's anyone else that gets on the All-America, one of the three teams, or even honorable mentions out of Baylor, though, because there's just not a quote-unquote star. I do think Akinjo's kind of their leader, though. He's leading them in minutes per game, and the assist numbers are really good. I haven't looked, but that's got to be up there nationally when you're averaging 6.3 assists per game.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. It's the culture that makes it all work there. And some of those numbers might go up, too, as we continue to move through, because they're going to have to play more minutes per game. It's the kind of the same thing that happened with Purdue. They just killed a bunch of teams early on, so you're not going to get the minutes per game per se, but you've got a fantastic game to open up Big 12 play, Jan 1 against Iowa State. I mean, that is going to be a hell of a game. You've got an overachieving Iowa State team against a Baylor team, both of these teams undefeated, and I don't think if you ask both of these coaches at the beginning of the year, would you be undefeated by the time you get to Big 12 play, they probably would have both told you no.
Right.
But here we are, and we're setting up for a Wild West in the Big 12.
I really hope that game happens because it's the signature game on New Year's Day, and I'm very curious to see how Iowa State plays, who, by the way, is one of the better stories in college basketball right now. To go from whatever it was, 2-22 or something outrageously bad last year, to I guess they're they're one of four remaining undefeated teams in the country right now. And if they win that game, they'll knock off one of them. So I don't think they're going to win against Baylor, but I would give them a chance of hanging in that game the way they played. They've been tested so far. It's not like they just rolled over a bad competition.
KenPom currently projecting it as a 69-62 Baylor victory.
Yeah.
So if Bovada were to set the line at 7 right now, what are you taking?
It's tough. I'd probably Baylor, but can Iowa State hang with them and make it a competitive 8-9, 10-point loss? I think so. I don't think Iowa State's going to get run over, but Baylor is still Baylor. We saw what they did to Villanova. They even, the way they beat Oregon, I thought was still impressive to me. I know Oregon has looked terrible, but to go on the road, come back at a game like that, when you were the number one team, target on your back, I think they've looked really good.
Here's why I would take Iowa State, though, in this situation, is that they're a super defensive-minded team, top 10 in KenPom right now, and Baylor is too. They're top 5 right now in KenPom. But when you get into those defensive-minded games and the lower scoring you keep it, the more that you can maybe get an underdog cover. You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever it's a lower scoring total, obviously fewer points means there's more of a chance for you to cover that number. And just because it's two very defensive-minded teams. And Iowa State isn't great offensively, but defensively they're elite right now. And if they can play at that elite level against a team like Baylor, I think you can hang within that 7 and maybe give yourself a chance to win at the end of the game.
Yeah. So on the note of our pre-conference All-America teams here, I'll just run through the 5 that I have just in case anyone hasn't sort of pieced it together yet. But EJ Liddell, forward. Other forward, Benedict Mathurin, who we haven't really talked about, but his numbers, the way that he played in that Tennessee game sort of put it over the top for me. I was down to him and Banchero for the forward spot. I give a slight edge to him. Jaden Ivey, Ochai Agbaji at guard, who are your guards as well. And then I have Drew Timmy at center. You, I guess, don't have Banchero or Timmy on your midseason All-American. Do you want to read off yours? And I think it is amazing that we're sitting here, and at this point in the season, I would not have guessed that we would not have Banchero or Timmy on your team, and that's totally fine. I think it's justifiable.
Right.
It's just sort of shocking it's gotten to this point.
I think when you look at sort of the sticker shock performances that a guy like Oscar Tshiebwe has put up, it was just too much for me to leave him off of my team in that case. And listen, I know Timmy's had his moments too, but he has not, and again, not totally his fault as of late, but he hasn't put up any sort of monster numbers, and he hasn't really played anyone of late either, because I feel like Gonzaga, they haven't been on a pause.
Texas Tech. Remember,
but like, he didn't do much against Texas Tech.
Silenced, yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't super efficient against either Northern Arizona or Northern Alabama. And I just look at a guy like Tshiebwe, who it feels like every night's getting 20 rebounds.
Yeah, he's averaging 16. That's absurd.
Right. Yeah. So I had to go with Tshiebwe there. But again, would Timmy be on my second team? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he has a signature performance this season. That 37-point game against Texas in the beginning of the season was absurd.
Yeah, that
was absolutely
that is the signature
absurd
moment. Right. And they could not stop him in that game. His numbers have dipped a little bit, 17 points per game. Or 16.7 if you want to get particular, compared to 19 last year. Rebounds down from 7 to 6. But this goes back to what you were saying, how will these numbers go up? Probably. He's only averaging 26.5 minutes so far on the season, is Drew Timmy. That's going to go up, and that's probably skewed by a couple of those blowout games early in the year where he just went to the bench. But against Texas Tech, 7 points, 4 rebounds. Like, they won that game pretty soundly, and they didn't get much from Holmgren or Timmy, which was impressive from a Gonzaga perspective.
Right. Listen, they still have other pieces on this team that I really like. Like Bolton, Andrew Nembhard, I think, is very slept on this roster as well. I got a question for you, though, about All-Americans. Do you think we'll see Chet Holmgren on that list when it's all said and done?
I couldn't quite get there.
Not an honorable mention, but what do they do? 3 teams usually?
3 teams, and then there's some honorable mentions. Put it this way. I have, let's see, 5, 10, probably like 15 players named here, and he didn't crack the 15, so that would be 3 teams right there. But he could get there. I don't think he's had a signature moment yet. He had that great first game where he had a triple-double, I believe, or he at least flirted with it, but that was against some lousy team, and he is off to sort of record numbers for a freshman at his size and stature and filling up the stat sheet the way he is, but I don't know if the college football fan that hasn't really consumed college basketball, it's not like he's been all over SportsCenter to the degree right. that I thought he would be. I think Banchero has been more of a name out of the two freshmen yeah. so far.
Yeah, and I think Banchero, once they start playing some more games, well, when it's all said and done, I think Paolo Banchero is going to be an All-American.
So here's an intriguing question. I agree. I think he will get there. And if Duke is rolling through the ACC, that only helps his case. If you had to pick one guy right now, like if Bavada just gave you no odds whatsoever, you could take mm-hmm. one guy to win National Player of the Year, Wooden, the best award for best player in college basketball. Is it Timmy? Is it Banchero? Is it Shibway? Like, who is it? I think it's sort of fascinating that we're at this point and the Timmy Banchero versus the field has sort of fizzled, in my opinion.
If you're not a staunch box score reader, I think it's Travion Williams. I really do.
Yeah, but is he going to win it? I don't see him winning it with Ivy and Edie also there. And
but he's the guy that makes that team go.
To start the year, you know?
Right, but like he came off the bench. He could have told Matt Painter to go F himself. I'm a starter. I'm an all Big Ten first teamer from a season ago. He could have told Matt Painter to go fuck himself a season ago, heading into this season, right? But he chose not to. He chose to be a great teammate. Like, that's why I say if you're not a box score reader, I think you have to give it to Travion because he embodies what it means to be a total team player, and he's doing it on one of the best teams in the country, and he goes out there and puts on all these fantastic performances. And, like, you look at some of these games that he puts together, it's like you almost wonder what he could do if he was out there for 30 minutes or so. And I think once you do get to Big Ten play, he is going to be out there a little more frequently. Like, I look at that NC State game.
I don't think he'll get to 30, though. He's going to get to, like, maybe 22, 23
Well, let me
minutes.
Put it this way, all right? So that NC State game, no other game this year has he played more than 24 minutes. But that NC State game, he played 33 minutes.
Yeah, overtime,
he goes out
right?
there.
Yeah.
Right, the overtime game, 22 points, 9 assists, 12 rebounds, 4 blocks as well in that game against NC State. I think once he gets the Big Ten play, he's going to be flirting more in the 28 to 30 neighborhood.
But then that means Zach Edey's playing 11 minutes, and you can't do that, right?
Well, I think Matt Painter might try to get a little creative and find ways because I think Travion's too good of a passer to potentially rule out the potential of a Edey and Williams lineup. I think there's a way that it can work, and it's because of what Travion can do passing the basketball.
Yeah. So, one, I agree with everything you're saying about Travion Williams. Like, he's playing as good or, if not, better than anyone else in the country right now. His passing's amazing. I love watching the guy play. But, to me, I don't really see a world where he gets to clear-cut, top-of-the-mountain National Player of the Year, and the voters vote on him. Because there's just going to be too many voters that check the stats and see he's only playing 22, 23 minutes. I just don't see him getting past 22, 23 minutes this year. And I'm also a little bit lower, I think, on Purdue than you, and I think once we get into conference play, they're going to lose and maybe slip off the top tier a little bit. But even taking that aside, the fact that Jaden Ivey, Zach Edey are on his team as well doesn't really help his cause.
Here's my other name that I would go with. Oshai Agbaji.
Yeah, I like that. I think he's a good bet right now.
Yeah, and he plays that guard-ish position. He plays for Kansas. Like, he's a senior. All that stuff sort of helps his case as well. So I think Oshai Agbaji and just the step that he's taken to be that leader, to be that sort of killer. Like, I almost see a little bit of like, Io in a guy like Oshai Agbaji, where he's going to be that killer when you need a bucket, when you're Kansas. It's going to be Oshai, and I trust him. I think of all these guys, maybe Jaden Ivey should be in this conversation, but it's like Ivy, Oshai Agbaji, and Paolo Banchero. If I need a bucket right now, like, those are the guys that I want trying to get it for me right now.
Here's a name we haven't brought up. Jabari Smith. Does he make an All-American team?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, he does. Yeah. He was on the fringe of mine, and I love Jabari Smith, man.
Yeah, like, who doesn't?
The man crush that I've got on Jabari Smith right now is second to none, because he might be the guy I had the hardest time leaving off. Like, I was trying to convince myself every which way that he belonged on this team over a guy like EJ Liddell, Travion Williams, Oscar Sheet. Like, I tried so hard to do it, and I couldn't get to that point quite yet, but he's certainly going to be on one of the three teams, and he plays on a pretty good, I know Auburn lost last night as of us recording this, but I still think
losing?
That
I thought they were up big. Maybe
Auburn against
LSU.
Oh,
right?
Oh no, wait. I'm mixing up my games here. I'm thinking of the Mississippi
LSU
State game. No, they
just
did.
Couldn't hit a
you're correct. They
basket
yeah, they did end up winning
game
last night. Yeah. I'm thinking of Mississippi State. They went up and got a win against who was it? It's escaping me right now. Against Arkansas.
Yeah.
The other A team in the SEC. But no. So okay. Yeah. So they won. They're 12-1. They're a really, really strong basketball team. And I love Jabari Smith, man. Like, he does a lot of things that you just know, like, I feel like he's not going to get enough love this year, but he's going to be one of those guys. He's going to get to the NBA and he's going to be a freak. Like,
right.
I'm really excited for this NBA draft class because there are some really special players in it.
You know, this just taught me is it's going to be a fun year for Baconator Bachelor when we bring that back.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
next episode we do
maybe
it.
Next,
because,
I was going to say next week. Let's
right.
do it.
Yeah, we're getting across the new year into conference play. Hopefully, games are happening at a frequent rate and all that. And it's if for those that don't know and haven't listened to the podcast, but we basically treat it like The Bachelor and cross off a couple names each time we record. So pretty much each week, I guess we sort of have to wait for that wooden list to come out officially, mm-hmm. and then we start crossing off teams from there. But we could even cheat a little bit and start early. There's a lot of players in the conversation. And I'm not saying that Zach Edey's going to win, but it's tough to just totally cross off a guy playing as well as Zach Edey right now when there's not
right.
a head and shoulders Luka Garza type figure at the top.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. Listen, you're right. I mean, Baconator Bachelor is going to be all-time stuff
yeah.
for us this year. So I'm looking forward to that. There's a lot of good candidates, but you're right. There's no head and shoulder. There's not even like a race, I would say, either. Like last year, we got to a point where we were thinking, okay, could it be Io? Could it be Luka? And it was kind of a two-horse race at that point, but like there's not even a race right now. It's a wide-open competition.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some one-and-dones now where we go through some things that are on our mind in college basketball. Quick one thought, and then we're done with it.
One and done.
My guys.
Obviously, we have one in our conference. Has a doctorate degree in one and done, right?
I do want to bring up LSU. We talked about that game. Auburn wins it 70-55 last night. I just find it so fascinating that LSU has basically had a bipolarness compared to last year. You remember we were doing the podcast last year and I was screaming for LSU to get a single stop on defense and how
right.
they just had no defense whatsoever and had loads of offense. And what was the guy's name? It escaped me. That went to the NBA. Cam Thomas. Thank you. He was like a bucket getter for them. So last year, their KenPom numbers, offense was fifth in the country, defense 124. And there were several times I watched them play and they just could not stop a flipping thing. And I was screaming at myself, like, how does Will Wade have all these athletes, all these guys that should at least be quick and agile and be able to play good defense? How can he not teach these guys to play defense? Now it's this year, and sure, they brought in some transfers, a little bit different personnel, but all of a sudden, they're running this sophisticated, great defensive system. I got to give Will Wade credit. They're the number one defense on KenPom, and their offense is 79. I just have never seen a program completely flip identity like they have in such a short amount of time here, and they're still really solid. But even last night against Auburn, they just couldn't score a bucket. It took them 11 minutes to make a field goal, and it's the reverse problem of last year.
So a name to watch for All-American that probably won't end up making it just because of the nature of what his role is, but Tari Eason
yeah
comes off the bench, sixth man for LSU.
If they had a sixth man of the year, well, I guess Williams, he's not going to stay on the bench.
Yeah, I guess.
Probably, but yeah.
Right. But it's Eason right now. For SEC sixth man of the year, yeah, it's probably going to be Tari Eason right now because what he does and how he can disrupt games defensively, it's really, really fantastic to watch. I know he's soaring up NBA draft boards as well. But we kind of talked about this, too, when we were dissecting LSU, I think a couple shows ago. This is going to be a really, really tough stretch for them coming up. I mean, here's their start to SEC play, all right? You open up with Auburn. Then you have back-to-back home games against Kentucky and Tennessee. Then you go on the road to Florida, home against Arkansas, Alabama on the road, Tennessee on the road.
Gosh, that is brutal.
Welcome to the gauntlet. Now listen, the back end is a lot softer. I mean, you got your A&Ms, your TCUs, your Ole Misses, Vandys. Mississippi State's not super easy, but at least you have that game at home. And then you've got Georgia and a bunch of other games loaded back there as well. You got South Carolina and Missouri on the back end as well. But that is probably the toughest strength of schedule for a, what is that, 7-game stretch? Like, name me a tougher stretch of games that you've seen a team play in 7 games. Well, and that includes anyone playing in an MTE.
Right. I think Arizona was on one of the tougher 3-game stretches, but 2 of those have gotten postponed, unfortunately. I was so excited to see them play UCLA in some of the other games that they had. I guess the other one was USC, and that's just not going to pan out, I guess, which is unfortunate. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, LSU, I was a little underwhelmed by their offense the other night. Now there's 4 remaining undefeated teams. You got Baylor, Iowa State, who are set to play this weekend. Colorado State is still undefeated as we talk right now. And USC, and I got to say, maybe Colorado State is going to be the last one standing, right? Like, who knocks off Colorado State? Let me pull up their schedule. I mean, they're getting into conference play, and there's not a team in their conference that's better than 51 on KenPom. They're only 34 on KenPom, but they're sort of through their tough games. They were going to play Alabama, and that was going to be a great test, but they lost that game because of COVID.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And listen, there's hyper-efficient offense right now. They've got a couple of really fun players, Isaiah Stevens, David Rod. He's a big dude. That's fun to watch. There's certainly a team that I'm almost a little upset they're playing as well as they are right now.
Yeah.
They would have been a fun team to pick as a sleeper in March Madness.
They're going to be at large. Boise State on January 7th. Boise State's good. They just beat Washington State. They are a little bit better, I think, than their KenPom rating says. I bet they lose that game just because it's on the road. They're projected to lose by 1 on KenPom. If they lose that game, then I don't know. It's probably going to be Baylor as the last team standing here. That's just because I think Baylor beats Iowa State. But once you get deeper into conference play, Baylor's bound to lose at some point.
Right. The Big 12 is just going to be too tough at that point. Listen, I guess my one and done that I'll throw out there is just the SEC, man. It's a freaking fun conference right now.
It is.
I mean, you look at every single night, it feels like there's big games. It almost feels like an old Big East vibe. You know what I mean? Like, this is like the new Big East, it feels like. Because every single night, there's all these characters on the sidelines. You've got great teams. It's all these young coaches, right? And they're going out battling with each other night after night. You're seeing some of these rivalries brewing within with some of these coaches as well. It's fun to watch. And like, I'm watching Tennessee, Alabama last night. That felt like an NBA game with some of those big shots that were hit down the stretch.
Athletes just everywhere. Yep.
Right. It's just fun to watch. It's great basketball every single night. And listen, it is the best conference in college basketball right now. And I don't
better
even know
Big
if there's
12?
A close second.
Okay.
Yes. Better than the Big 12 right now. Better than the Big 12.
Man, I don't know. Big 12 still got Baylor, Kansas at the top. That's 2 teams that I think are in the top 5 in the country. So if you favor the top a little bit more, I don't really like Texas that much, but you could throw them in as another ranked team they have. I'd have to.
But look, think about it. Like, Texas is their 3, right? If I'm thinking through everything correctly in my head right now, Texas is their 3.
Iowa State.
Or Iowa State, okay.
Yeah.
Iowa State, we'll see what they really are, though, at a certain point, right? Because their schedule hasn't been the toughest so far either.
It's been decent, though. I mean, their strength of record is number 2 in the country. You got to give them some credit. I agree.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you're 12-0, too. But, okay, so the Big 12, if that's your third, listen, like, here's your third in the SEC right now. We're looking through it. So a group of, pick one, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, Bama. One of those teams is your third, and I think they'd wallop Iowa State.
I'm still going Big 12, and it's because Iowa State, TCU were the bottom of the barrel last year. Even TCU's 10-1. I know they really haven't played anyone, but you go down the list, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, West Virginia, those are all solid teams. And you look at KenPom's metrics right now, so he ranks all the conferences. Big 12 number one, 17.70 rating. Big 10 number two, 15.99, so about a 2-point drop. Then it's SEC, 14.64. I don't know. I mean, I think SEC should be better than that. They're clearly two to me.
Well, they're docked because, I mean, let's remember this, all right? The Big 12 is a 10-team conference, and that helps their case because you're the bottom of your conference isn't going to hurt you as
right,
much
you don't
as
have a Georgia.
The bottom.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a Georgia, you don't have a Mizzou, you don't have a Vandy, you don't have that in the Big 12. And it's, I think that's more a factor of the depth. Like, if we were to take the top 10 of the SEC versus the top 10 of the Big 12, because that's all the amount of teams that the Big 12 can offer you, I think you got to roll with the SEC.
Yeah. I don't know. Baylor and Kansas at the top is really intriguing. Like, Baylor and Kansas right now are
no,
in my
listen,
top
that,
tier.
That one,
SEC
too, is
SEC doesn't
better.
Have a top-tier team in terms of the tippy-tippy top right now. And they have a lot of tremendous teams that are probably 6 to 20, 25, and I'm very high on. But I don't know. I think having Baylor and Kansas is sort of the tiebreaker to me. And it's a good conversation. I love the SEC as much as anyone. So I'm with you that they're as fun to watch as anyone. It's an interesting conversation when you actually try to lay out a case who's the better conference right now.
Yeah, and that's fair. Listen, like, it kind of gets down to the if how much do you value the top of the top? Like, if you were to ask me, okay, you can only pick one of these conferences to win a national title, yeah, I'm going to go with the Big 12 because they've got the two best. Like, if you were to lay out, like, they do this all the time, like, oh, okay, two teams are matching up. Who are the five best players on the floor? Like, if you were to say the five best teams between the two conferences, the Big 12 has the first two. They've got the first two picks off the board, no doubt.
Yeah. Also, I'm just looking at the Big 12 KenPom stuff. Like, why is Texas still playing at a 356 tempo on KenPom? One of the slowest tempos in the entire... I just don't... Chris Beard, what are we doing, man? Like, figure
You've got
figure
guys,
out.
Man. You got guys that can run.
I know. It's
Marcus
so
Carr, Andrew Jones. Like, get them going.
Yeah.
Christian Bishop as a trailer.
Right. I mean, that's been I think biggest disappointment has been Texas and also Marcus Carr, right? Like, I went back and looked at preseason All-America teams just to sort of evaluate where you're starting from and where we are now for our All-America team that we put together. Marcus Carr was pretty much consensus on those. And I don't know, even Timmy Allen, like, they're just not really getting a whole lot out of all that talent they have there. Looking at the SEC odds on Bovada to win the conference, just another PSA to everyone out there, Auburn is still plus 800. I don't get it. It's it's a typo. I mean, you should jump on that,
right? Exploit it while you can. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough because it's the SEC, and we just talked about how many different teams can win. But Kentucky plus 260, Alabama plus 325, top two, Tennessee plus 600. Why would Tennessee be above Auburn right now? I know Tennessee is playing some decent basketball as well and has won some games, but I just think Auburn has a much higher ceiling.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the prospects of an Auburn. I think they're tough, and I think they're one of those teams. Like, I don't think the best team in the SEC is going to win the SEC tournament this year. Like, last year, Bama was the best team in the SEC. They won the SEC tournament. You could kind of get that vibe, right? I don't know if the best team in the SEC is going to win the SEC tournament. It kind of feels like some of those years where Duke is great, but they don't win the ACC tournament. It kind of has that sort of vibe to it in the SEC this year.
Right. Speaking of conference odds, I gave out Houston as a good odds last time we recorded a podcast. I think I said they were at like plus 105 or something to win the American.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to talk about them because they have lost Marcus Sasser and Tremont Mark for the entire season. Two of their top four scorers. So good break by me to put in that pick right before it comes out. They are plus 200 now on Bovada to win the American. They're tied with Memphis. I still would guess they win that conference. And I would even say double down if you want to. But it's disappointing that we're not going to see Houston at the tippy-tippy top. And that's really the first big injury we've seen across college hoops. I mean, there's been, you know, little stuff like NC State, Manny Bates, but I'm talking title contenders
this is,
or Final Four.
Yeah, no, you're talking about a team that essentially lost its chance to go to the Final Four because of the injuries it sustained. Like, Houston was a team that could go back to the Final Four this year. And I felt good about that because of the way that they played and some of the fight that they showed in a lot of these games. Like, they're a fun team to watch. And it wasn't just like last year where it was defensive. Like, they were fun to watch offensively, too. And that's even without Quentin Grimes.
Right.
So I was really looking forward to the potential of Houston this year, but losing Sasser, I mean, that sucks, man. That really, really sucks.
He was playing so good, too. He was probably an All-American guard. Honestly, that's a name I didn't even think of, but if he stays healthy, I think he cracks that team because we talked about how there's not a lot of guards out there that are sort of going out and getting it outside of Abaji and Ivy, I would say. Final couple one-and-dones for me, and if you have anything else, feel free to chime in, but Duke minus 105 right now to win the ACC. I would jump on that on Bovada. Also, Providence plus 1,500 to win the Big East feels like decent odds. They're already 2-0. They had a big win this week over Seton Hall. They're playing some really good basketball there after some somewhat down years for them. Good to see them playing solid again. I really like the Big East as well. I think that's an underrated conference right now. ACC, I mean, what is the over-under right now in tournament teams? 3.5? I guess I was going to say
3.5.
It's just, it's bleak, man. Like, Wake Forest is in the conversation for the second best team in the conference the way UNC is playing.
I think it's going to be one of those things where once you get into ACC play, you're going to see two or three teams prop up, and it's not necessarily that they're good. They're just going to be able to beat bad teams.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of those teams that can do that once you get to the ACC. I like the way that Virginia Tech kind of held its own against Duke. I think that ended up being a double-digit victory for Duke, but it certainly felt a lot closer than that. I like
they
that Virginia
the
Tech team.
Va Tech,
yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. I still like that Virginia Tech team, but then after that, it gets kind of run down, but you've got a couple blue bloods that might get a bump on Selection Sunday like a UNC, so who knows how that whole thing shakes out. But I do think that the ACC will probably get four, but you're not going to feel... If you ask me how many of them make it to the second weekend, you're setting that over-under at 1.5.
Yeah, because...
And I'm probably taking the under.
It's Duke, and then it's probably Virginia Tech, I would say, as a 7-8 seed. And then it's maybe a 10 and an 11 seed. And that's it, right? Like, I don't really see how Louisville or... Even if Virginia goes on a run or Wake stays kind of where they're at, they're just not going to get above an 8-9 line, in my opinion, given what they did in the non-conference. Louisville has losses to Western Kentucky, and I believe Furman was the other one, which was without Chris Mack. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a loss, and it doesn't look good on their resume. And they're way outside of the bubble right now. And you look at a team like Louisville, who I do think has a chance to play its way back, but Duke minus 105, what am I missing there? I just don't see a world where Duke does not win that conference.
It's a tournament format. It's a tournament format. And the fact that you've got guys that have gone up against each other for years. I'm talking from a coaching standpoint. It's just that. Like, that's the only thing. Is if Duke
but
comes
this
out
is
and
outright
plays flat,
regular season. So.
Oh, is this regular season? Yeah. Then I don't know what the hell you're missing. Like, I can't help you there.
Bovada says number one seed in conference tournament will be graded the winner. Duke's going to be the number one seed in the ACC tournament. I would bet.
Yeah, and I think
a good
it would be
that.
Yeah, and I honestly think it could be by a couple games. Like, very rarely do you see conference number one seeds win the conference by more than two games. I mean, Duke could win this thing by 4 or 5 games.
Virginia Tech is their toughest test, and they just beat them. Like, it's and that was they've only played one ACC game, but. I mean, they're 1-0. Va Tech is 0-2 as well. So if you're talking about...
Now, they are going to be coming off a pause. They are going to be coming off a pause, so you wonder how they sort of respond to that. Maybe that's part of the calculus there, but I don't think 2 or 3 games that they might struggle in out of this COVID pause, if they even struggle at all, is going to be the difference. So in claiming that number one seed. One that I've got, you talked about how Texas and Chris Beard's a struggling program. I mean, Juwan Howard, hold my beer. I mean,
yeah, holy cow.
They lost to UCF today.
That might be
85-71. Like, they are the biggest disappointment in college basketball right now. You're talking about a team that people thought could go to the Final Four, maybe even compete for a national title, and they look lifeless out there right now. And you look at some of their losses. I mean, they're not even close. They've played in one close loss, and they're 7-5 right now. One close loss. Now, listen, I get it. Arizona was a much better team than you thought they would be this season, and you kind of caught them at the beginning of their rise to where they are right now. But, like, you're getting murdered by a team like UNC. I mean, you got killed by Minnesota. I know it was only a 10-point game when it was all said and done, but that was one of those games where it felt like Minnesota won by, like, 15, 20 points, and that was on your home floor.
Yeah.
You've lost 2 home games so far this season against inferior teams, and that's something that... I mean, I don't know if Michigan's going to be a tournament team, because it's not like it's going to get a lot easier. They've got a real identity crisis right now in their hands.
Here's all you need to know about Michigan. They scored 51 points against UNC's defense. I mean, you have yeah. major problems if that's yeah. all you can register against the Tar Heels right now. I watch UNC way too much than I'd like right now, and that defense is as bad as I've seen from a elite program in college basketball in all the years I've watched. And Michigan only scored 51. It wasn't the Dean Dome, but I don't know. I know one game wonky stuff happened. You missed shots, whatever. They are not looking good right now. And they started the year number 2 on KenPom. They've slipped to 21, but that is all based on their preseason bias. They're playing like the 60th, 70th best team in the country right now. And their resume is of that caliber, right? I mean, best yep. win, maybe San Diego State. I don't think I'm missing any of my memory yeah. bank there. It's rough.
No, yeah, that's the best win right now, both KenPom-wise and just eye test. Everything else is outside the top 100 pretty much.
Wow.
You've got Buffalo at 92, the opener that you won, but everything else has been fairly unimpressive. Last one and done that I want to get to, and I don't know if you've got any more.
No, I'm all done.
But I do want to give a quick shout out to a friend of mine that was lost over this past week, Jeff Dickerson. For some of you, you may know him. He may have been, you may be thinking, why are you talking about him on a college basketball podcast? But he was a Bears ESPN reporter and reported on the Chicago Bears, but he was also the color analyst for Loyola basketball. And he was kind of through there for the rise, and Porter Moser gave a great tribute to him because him and Porter became really close. I don't know if you're familiar with the Twitter account Porter's Jacket.
I'm not. That sounds awesome, though.
But it's basically it's a Twitter account that was like and you kind of know this too, but like the Jim Boeheim jacket toss. Porter
right.
Moser kind of did the same thing at Loyola. And JD was one of the guys who kind of brought it to the light because he always talked about it on the broadcast. And it got to the point, too, where you almost felt like Porter was doing it because he knew about it. And even in games where Loyola was up big, he would toss the jacket. And Porter actually wears these shoes now. They're these Cole Haan shoes that have extra cushioning on them because he would be stomping on the sidelines because he was pissed at his team or whatever, so he'd take it out on the floor and stomp. And he JD would go into his office, and he's like, man, my feet are killing me right now because of all that stomping that I'm doing on the floor. And he was like, oh, try these shoes on. And there are these Cole Haan shoes, and now Porter Moser wears them all the time. And they've got like a little extra padding, so every time you kind of see Porter stomping, his foot's not hurting, and it's because of something that JD did for him. But JD is one of the greatest guys in the world, and the thing that makes it so heartbreaking is because he lost his wife 2 years prior to cancer.
Yeah,
and
it's so sad.
They leave behind an 11-year-old son. And I don't know if anyone's seen this, but there is a GoFundMe out there.
Yeah.
Parker's Fund. And it's coming up on $1 million raised, which is amazing to see in the matter of about 48 hours. So if you have anything to give, please do. Parker's Fund on GoFundMe. He was a wonderful man, one of the nicest guys. And he always cared about other people, always asking me, hey, when am I going to see you at Loyola games? Because he knew I was doing the women's games. And I never got to see him at the Loyola games, unfortunately, because his health started to take a turn for the worse as the season was starting this year. But he's a great man. He's going to be sorely missed and one of the best of us.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Really sad. Makes me really feel for the 11-year-old Parker. And I did see Adam Schefter tweeted out a link to the GoFundMe.
Oh, man, he's been great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if anyone's not, I mean, I'm not using GoFundMe a ton, but that would be probably an easy way to just pull it up. And if you want to contribute, you can go to his Twitter. And I did see the link there to get to that GoFundMe for Parker, which is really sad. And I'm glad that you brought that up. And I mean, you interacted with him a good bit, it sounds like, right? One-on-one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he was the best, man.
All right. Well, we went on sort of a sad note there, but hopefully we'll have more college hoops to recap next week. Hopefully we get this Iowa State-Baylor game in. Really intrigued to see how that goes. There will always be some upsets and things to break down. We'll continue to keep you guys updated. Maybe do some Baconator Bachelor as we get closer and closer to the bulk of conference play here, really. So subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Follow the show on Twitter as well, at @made4march. It's made and then 4 March is our Twitter page. You can check us out there. And we'll talk to you guys with a full recap of the college hoop slate next week.
The game was over.